When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Anti-Semitism on major university campuses in 2024 is not solved. It continues in 2025. News items from New York City these last days. A large group of people invaded the Columbia Library and essentially occupied it and pushed other students out of the way as during preparation for examinations. The response from Columbia was profoundly different than it was in 2024. News item, Columbia University suspends 65 students after they took over the library. That's 4 days ago. At the same time, we have Columbia University laying off 180 of its workforce. Why? Because the Trump administration some time ago canceled $400 million in funding because of anti-Semitism on campus in 2024. That's one item, major university. And now fresh as you get. Trump administration cuts $450 million more from Harvard grants, alleging anti-Semitism. The same charges made before. This one adds, this is the Hill reporting. The reduction, which was announced by the White House Joint Task Force to Combat Anti-Semitism, comes on top of the $2.2 billion federal funding slashed from the Ivy League school last week. I welcome my colleague Tal Fortgang, writing most recently at the National Review May issue magazine about anti-Semitism on campus and what is to be done. A real question not only for those who are victims and persecuted by hate speech and hate conduct, but also the universities that at this point are going backwards and clearly not yet able to respond to the scale of the threat. Hence, Columbia having made a number of decisions, one of which was not to repudiate the Trump administration's decision, but was to work along with it. That has not worked to stop the student protests. 65 students suspended and no end in sight. Tal, a very good evening to you. You publish this at the National Review Online with your colleague Matthew Solomonson. And what I learned from this is that the Orthodox Jewish Congregations of America, the Union of the Orthodox, called shortly the OU, has been meeting about this and has most recently met about what's to happen, what's to be done with these invasions. And it turns on the matter of free speech. And therein lies the puzzle. What kind of free speech would answer this is the suggestion made, if I read your article correctly. And there were dissenting voices saying that free speech is not adequate. What is the challenge as you see it now, Tal? Free speech or hate speech? Can you tell the difference? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. And thanks again for the opportunity to talk about these thorny, tangled issues. I think you ask the question correctly. What role does restoring free speech to college campuses play in fighting this national origin discrimination problem, discrimination against Jews, discrimination against Israelis. Frequently, the suggestion is made that what ails universities is that they have drifted from their fundamental mission of unbridled academic freedom with free speech at its core. And I could give you chapter and verse on the ways in which universities have abandoned free speech principles over recent decades. That is hardly contested. But the one suggestion is that it is that closed-off environment that has led to rampant discrimination against Jews and Israelis, and reopening the gates of free speech, as it were, would allow true equal protection of school rules and the law to flow and protect Jewish and Israeli students, faculty, and other university affiliates. There is a dissenting camp, as you mentioned, to which I will admit I belong, that says free speech is an admirable goal. It is part of the means of correcting what ails the campus, but it cannot be the only element of restoring universities to places that are fair, equal, free, do not become petri dishes of radicalism and the discrimination that results. It's part of it, but there's more fundamental reform that needs to occur before free speech can actually work its magic.
Everything's in an example. Let's go to an example you give in your piece, I believe. We don't want no Zionists here. Is that free speech or is that provocation? Is that threat? I can't tell.
It's a great question. It depends how literally you want to interpret that phrase. People who support the existence of the State of Israel are Zionists. That is the definition. It is possible that saying we don't want people who support the State of Israel here would include in a prohibited way Israeli nationals who presumably would like the very source of their national origin identity, that is the State of Israel, to exist, which would make them Zionists. I think that parsing the legality of these expressive actions can be a bit of a distraction, because what the demonstrators who say such mantras are really displaying is that their goals in demonstrating and making life miserable for their fellow students, preventing them from going to class or traversing campus freely, what they are trying to do is make their campus a hostile place for people with whom they disagree. That is a violation of the principles of free speech because it prevents honest conversation and true academic freedom, true pursuit of truth. But it masquerades as a kind of political argument, maybe too generous, but a political mantra about opposition to Israel, its treatment of the Palestinians, its policies, and so on. But what it really betrays is that this is a kind of intimidation campaign, and we need to examine the conditions that led to this being not just normalized, but what students go to universities to do. The very fact that there are student groups that gather precisely to say such things, to intimidate fellow students, to try to push certain points of view beyond the bounds of acceptable discourse, points of view that are otherwise quite mainstream in American society. Support for Israel, a kind of Zionism, is quite mainstream. Yet these students come to campus with the intent and fervent dedication to pushing people who hold those viewpoints out of polite society.
The Orthodox Union meeting to debate these matters, was there a sense of the room, Tal, or did it Did it just raise questions and not seek a consensus?
This came up throughout the Orthodox Union hosted its annual attorneys conference in February, late January, early February, and that's where some of our observations are drawn from. There was certainly a diversity of opinion about the source of what ails the university and consequently what it will take to address university anti-Semitism. I will say that a majority, I would say even a vast majority of the people in attendance, some of whom have a foot in academia, many of whom have children or nieces and nephews who are currently in university or were recently in university, the overwhelming sense was that something more dramatic needs to occur to reset the university so that freedom of speech can actually have its intended pro-social effects. There was a great deal of skepticism that simply reinstituting pro-free speech policies like institutional neutrality or pure unfettered academic freedom would do the trick.
I'm speaking to Tal Fortgag, writing most recently at the National Review magazine, the issue for May, with his colleague Matthew Solomson, about anti-Semitism on campus and what is to be done. The fresh examples say that it's not 2024 and behind us, it's 2025 and right in front of us. When we come back, what is to be done? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.